Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Becky Talks Parks, a podcast for parks and recreation professionals who are passionate about raising the bar in the field. This is episode number 8, and I'm talking to Joe Burns, all about health and wellness in parks and recreation. Joe Burns is a co-founder of the Colorado Public Health and Parks and Recreation Collaborative. She started her career in therapeutic recreation and then developed this love and appreciation for the way that health can really relate back to Parks and Rec. Her job right now is really on a statewide level, but it's helping local agencies to partner with the nonprofits and businesses and healthcare organizations that can make long-term lasting impacts on the community. I think that health is one of those things that everyone knows is important. I mean, on a personal level, we have to remember to go outside and be active, take care of our physical and mental health. But it's also about realizing that in order to make it as effective as possible in terms of providing healthy services, we have to be able to collaborate and find ways to do it together. We cannot do this alone. So Joe really helps us to do that. And I believe that Joe is raising the bar by showing that small steps are actually big steps when it comes to improving the health of your community. You don't have to transition into healthy vending all at once. You don't have to ban smoking in all of your parks all at once. But as long as the actions that you take align with your organization's missions and values, then over time, you're going to craft this culture of health and well-being. And so sometimes a small conversation or just a small step in the right direction is actually quite a big leap. I think the other reason why Joe is raising the bar is because health is a really complex issue. And so when we try to tackle this, let's say no smoking in parks, what you're actually trying to do is change the behavior of those in your community to be a little bit more healthy. And that's a big deal. Changing your community's behavior is something that shouldn't be taken lightly, and it's a great responsibility and a great privilege, but it's also about doing it in a really sensitive and responsible way so that it doesn't push people away from you, but rather brings them closer to you because they know that you have their best interest in mind. So with that being said, let's go ahead and get into the episode. If you like it, please share it so that more people can find out about the podcast and the work that Joe Burns is doing. Thank you guys so much and hope you enjoy. So welcome everybody to another episode of the Becky Talks Parks podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be talking to Joe Burns. Welcome.
Hi, Becky. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm excited to have you on the show. So can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what your background is and how you ended up where you are in the parks and recreation space?
Oh, sure. I am a parks and recreation professional for the last 20 years. I started out in therapeutic recreation and earned my degree and have spent 20 years working with individuals with disabilities and chronic illnesses at a variety of different settings, primarily in community settings. So therapeutic camping, community municipality, therapeutic recreation program, and that kind of thing. Ran many different camps and a lot of outdoor programs for people with disabilities. And as I kind of took a break for Parks and Recreation one year, I came back and was fortunate enough to work with Colorado Parks and Recreation Association here and got hooked into talking with some people in public health and started realizing we had a lot of different kinds of things in common. And then I really started to cross-train and participate in a leadership program for parks and it was really for all public health individuals, and I think I was the only parks and recreation person there, but there was people from healthcare and all different realms of public health. And it was called the Regional Institute for Health and Environmental Leadership's Advanced Leadership Training Program, and it was an opportunity to really look through multiple different lenses at health. And I realized, wow, we as therapeutic recreation folks or parks and recreation administrators, all of us really have a much larger role in health than I had ever realized before. And I found some new people that I really wanted to play in the sandbox with.
Nice, cool. So can you talk to us about what you're doing today and maybe some exciting initiatives that you're seeing? Because I know that you're very much in the space of combining health, which of course
is related to Parks and Recreation, but a lot of times there's a disconnect because we're trying to figure out as Parks and Recreation professionals, what can we actually do to improve the health of our community? So what have you been seeing?
Well, what the most current hat that I wear right now is I'm the co-founder for the Colorado Public Health Parks and Recreation Collaborative. So we have really brought together, because of my experience with public health professionals and one of my colleagues, Brian Cates, we realized the most important thing that we could start doing was actually talking to each other. And what came with that is we realized we needed a secret decoder ring because we didn't necessarily talk the same language. And it became an opportunity to for us to focus on one specific area, which happened to be childhood obesity. And all of us were kind of talking around childhood obesity in a variety of different ways, but we realized we could really start talking about it much more cohesively together, looking at, well, how do you improve kids' opportunities for physical activity? How do you look at making better or making healthier food option choices available to kids, either in schools or in our parks and recreation after school programs and that kinds of stuff. So it really became, how do we start having this conversation together about health? So the collaborative really brings together folks in parks and recreation, public health, built environment, folks who are in planning, folks who are in nutrition and immunizations. All of us come together to kind of say, ooh, well, we're working on this aspect of it, trying to create safe routes to parks. And Parks and Recreation may be saying, oh, well, we're trying to offer more healthy choices and options at our recreation centers for food choices. And it really became this aha moment for all of us talking, is that the more we bring more of us together, the more opportunities we had to be able to put health front and center for our kids at that point. And once we started really getting cozy in the conversation about childhood obesity, building that trust amongst all of us as different professionals opened this door up for us to start really having some harder conversations about where some of our health challenges in our communities come from, whether it's access to parks, whether it's access to healthcare, whether it's access to a variety of different things. So now we're having harder conversations, like how do you change policy in public spaces for sugary drinks or promoting healthier drinks in places like concession stands and baseball fields and football fields and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of how we came together to be able to start having more fun conversations, I guess you could say, around health and what health equity looks like and how all of us have the ability to contribute to that.
Can you talk about how the local parks and recreation professionals can start to take baby steps? Because now you're having these larger conversations around changing and, you know, the vending machines and concessions and like, and you're part of a statewide organization, but can individuals at a very local level start to take action?
Oh, sure. Especially, I think, up here in, I'm in Colorado, so here in Colorado we have a variety of different parks and recreation folks working on big stuff and little stuff. The city of Westminster has brought together a program called Prescriptions for Health, where they're partnering with healthcare, they're partnering with local public health agencies and their own organization to work towards bringing individuals who are ready to make big health changes in their life. But the small ones, I think, are where we really can start. I think the first challenge is just looking at or building health into an organization's priorities and mission or philosophy and trying to put some of it in action one step at a time. So if it is something that a local programmer or a parks and recreation professional wants to do, is think about how do we offer things that can help our community members make small changes if they're ready for it. And it may be when you host that special event Here in Arvada, we have something called Cider Days and that kind of thing. Offer healthy foods and traditional festival foods. That's a great way to get started. If you're doing things for kids after school, instead of offering one particular kind of snack, offer several or just offer healthy ones. It's a great way for it to make the choice because everybody has the opportunity to eat a fruit and a crunchy snack and that kinds of stuff, and there's lots of choices. So I think the first thing is, well, changing an organizational mindset. And it might sound ginormous, but really it's a sitting down and having a conversation with your organization. Are we a part of the health game or are we not? And I think with all of the really fabulous research out there, whether you're looking at National Recreation and Parks Association health and wellness research, or you're working with looking at active living research stuff, it all points to the fact that parks and recreation and the outdoor spaces that we have access to are really part of that equation. We are a huge part of the overall health conversation in our communities. We have a huge amount of access to and with our community members who come into our rec centers, who access our parks, whether they're walking their dog or taking their kids to play on the playground. And how we start making little choices around those, I think, is the first step.
So I have a question regarding this new shift, because for me, I guess that I'm seeing it as new, but maybe it's not. Is this shift to thinking of Parks and Recreation as this kind of healthcare service provider, like, is that a new thing, or when did that start?
Oh, okay. You want a fun little history lesson?
I do.
Cool. If you go back to your Parks and Recreation or Recreation and Leisure 101 class, Parks and Recreation, or organized recreation activities, was really part of the first public health movements back in the 1900s, where people were being challenged by a lot of individuals moving into urban areas and moving into the cities during industrialization. And it was some of the early healthcare providers and early recreation folks who were like, we need to get people outside. People are getting more sick again, or we're seeing people being more sick in these urban settings than they were when they were primarily rural. Man, I can never say the word rural setting. So we were there from the beginning. I mean, that's what's so exciting, is Parks and Recreation was actually there from the beginning when it came to getting kids active, creating opportunities for play. You look at even the forethought that it took to put Central Park into New York City. We were there for all of that. And I think we kind of moved away from it over time. It was always embedded in everything that I think we as parks and recreation professionals do, looking at physical activity, looking at sports and recreation, looking at fitness and wellness. All of that's built into what we do. It just wasn't necessarily on the forefront or the priority. I think now you're seeing, with our ginormous healthcare crisis in the United States, is how do we cut those costs? How do we make things more accessible to everyone in our communities? And how do we look at ways that are unique, whether we're utilizing technology? We see folks going into healthcare or going into hospitals and that kind of stuff, and they're staying shorter and shorter and shorter times. Well, where can they still find the opportunity to get care or encouragement or safe places to be active where they feel like there's support there? And I think Parks and Recreation is a really great place for us to be able to do that. More and more often now, I think I'm seeing like a physical therapy office, maybe located within a recreation center or within a what is it, a fitness club and that kinds of stuff, because they're seeing that overlap. And I think with public health, that's where we kind of have a really great opportunity to fit, is you start looking at clinics and trials and studies and research that public health is working on, is they're wanting to be out in the community too. And we have a great opportunity to connect with them and provide our public health professionals with space to do that. Think immunization clinics, think an opportunity to come get immunized for the flu. And then also at the same time, if you come in, we'll give you a day pass to the recreation center to do something fit or do something active, whether it's play basketball, go for a swim, take a walk in the park, that kinds of stuff. So there's really great overlap there.
Right. And it sounds like there might be opportunities beyond just the physical spaces, because I see that too. And now that you explain the history, it all kind of makes sense here. But are you seeing that more privatized health professionals are looking for those collaborations? Like, where does one start when they're trying to figure out how to improve their health? You said, first, we need to look at the mission and values of our organization and try to make small changes. But are there actually like partnerships or organizations that local Parks and Rec could look into for maybe funding or support in some way?
Yes, definitely. I think so, in some ways, just looking at your local public health organization is probably a great place to start. They are actually working, several of ours here in Colorado are already working with programs like Smoke-Free Parks, and they want to partner with folks in Parks and Recreation to help make those things happen. We also have another program, the Metro Healthy Beverage Partnership, and they're looking to partner with folks to say, okay, how can we have the conversation about healthy beverages? Maybe it's removing sugary beverages from common places or public places and looking at putting more waters or more healthy, low sugar beverages. So, you know, the way we got started as far as with some of our local connections was just having the conversations with people in other fields besides our own. I think, you know, your local hospital is a great place to reach out. Simply because the new rules related to healthcare require that almost all of the hospitals have to do community outreach service, and they're actually supposed to be looking for partnerships and stuff too. So I think it then becomes a mutual place. How do we work at this together? I also think, from my therapeutic recreation background, one of the things that folks who are providing therapeutic recreation within kind of institutional settings, whether it's a rehab facility or whether it is in the hospital, whether you're talking to folks with mental health and that kind of stuff, is that you look at, I guess discharging is the very clinical word, but you look at the fact that any of your patients or any of the folks that you're working with are ultimately wanting to go back into their own community and trying to find ways for them to connect with local folks in their community is really a practitioner's kind of job. So, I mean, if you have somebody with a chronic illness or you have somebody with a disability, getting outpatient treatment or that kind of stuff, when they're ready to go back into their community from a therapeutic recreation standpoint, they want to find people who are providing therapeutic recreation in their own community. And that's why Colorado does so well, is we have really exciting therapeutic recreation in our community. But I think on the whole, the healthcare providers are looking for, how do we get this individual who might have just come in for surgery, needs places to walk or rehab, let's say it's a knee injury kind of thing, they're automatically going to go to physical therapy. But what do they do next in their own community? Well, they can go walk in the park. They can actually go to their recreation center and swim, but they don't know that unless they're getting that information from their care provider, or we as Parks and Recreation folks are marketing ourselves in not only a way that this is a way to come have fun, this is a way to increase your physical activity levels, but hey, we're also here. If you're recovering from an illness or an injury, we have options for you to be able to engage
in that home exercise program that you may have just received from your physical therapist. So I think we kind of have to think of the fact that we're that in the trenches, in the community organization. So yeah, we can either reach out to healthcare providers, we can reach out to local public health clinics, we can also reach out to public health nurses who are working with folks in the community and the schools. And we actually started about talking about matching and pairing that up in Lakewood. So yeah, we also have to think about that there's folks, there's people in our communities that feel comfortable coming into our recreation centers because, hey, it sounds cool, it seems fun, but we also have a group of community members who may not feel comfortable coming into our recreation centers or our parks. And we really have to look at how do we make everyone in our community feel comfortable in the areas or in the places that Parks and Recreation provide, whether you're a community or municipal parks and recreation organization, or you are a special recreation district. I mean, we really need to consider the fact that people of all races, people of all genders, people of all income levels are interested in connecting and being healthy in our communities. And that's a really big part of it, is how do we reach out more broadly? I hope that answered your question. I think I danced around it and answered another one, but no, hey,
you did. And that leads us to our next question, because it sounds like, yes, we have the opportunity to collaborate with these health-oriented organizations. And maybe that's just as much as a simple conversation to get the ball rolling.
That's where they all start, is with a simple conversation. And I think that's the biggest thing, is whether it's health educators, so people who are, you know, in the colleges, the local nursing schools are a great place to start. That's where my colleague Brian Cates started, you know, some of his, is he started bringing in nursing students into the recreation center to do simple basic measurements of BMI, so body mass index, blood pressure, basic things that student nurses need to learn and do over and over again until they get it right. And great story. It was as simple as Brian connecting with the local college that was down there and having a talk with the public health nursing instructors and saying, hey, there might be a real opportunity for my community to be able to get kind of the not checkup, that's not really the word I'm looking for, but the check-in, to have like their blood pressure measured, to have their BMI measured, those kinds of things. And the school said, hey, we've got people who need to practice doing this, and they partnered, and it became a program. And one of their students, one of their nursing students, even helped save the life of one of their older community members whose blood pressure had skyrocketed while they were there. And they sent her to the hospital, and she was really close to having a stroke. So it's those amazing things that we kind of think, well, oh, that little conversation couldn't take us anywhere big. Well, yes, that's where it starts. The little conversation with the educators in health can happen. Those little conversations with organizations like American Diabetes Association, American Health Association, and say, hey, they have national evidence-based programs that they are already running across the country that are looking for places for homes to be exerted. Like the National Diabetes Prevention Program is a wonderful, wonderful companion partnership kind of opportunity for Parks and Recreation to say, hey, we have the space and the participants who might be interested, and they've already got the program, and they're looking for instructors that, well, quite frequently fit very well with our fitness and wellness instructors who have the knowledge and just need a little more training. So there's kind of how some of those partnerships can come together, as simple as having a conversation with another professional or another national or local not-for-profit organization. So
okay, so that makes sense. And yeah. So you start to have those conversations and realize what kind of services you can bring to the table and how it becomes this mutually beneficial opportunity. But mm-hmm. I imagine that before you go into planning a health program or doing an overhaul, you have to, like you mentioned earlier, involve the community and figure out what they're interested in and what maybe they're struggling with. Can you talk us through what community engagement means in relation to healthy initiatives?
I will do my best, but I also have to say that I am not a professional community organizer, and I am not a professional community engagement person. There are really people who get degrees with that stuff. So,
all right, you guys, I'm just going to take a little pause right here. I want to clarify something. The reason why I'm asking Jo about her experience is because I think that every community is so different, and community engagement should really be a well-rounded approach. So Joe's saying that there are people who get specifically trained and have specific education that aligns with becoming a community engagement facilitator. And I work with Greenplay, and Greenplay does that, right? So full transparency, that's what we do. We go in and we craft this entire strategy to engage the community, and that's so important. But I also think on a very local level, we have the ability to interact and communicate with the people who use our services. And I think it's really helpful to be able to talk to them in their own language. And so when I'm asking Jo about this, I'm asking about her personal experiences, not necessarily from the consultant point of view, but I hope to have that conversation in future episodes with some people from Greenplay, just so you guys have that perspective as well. Okay, I'm going to get back to the show now.
For me, it goes back to kind of the whole therapeutic recreation model, which is assess, plan, implement, and evaluate. And the first thing that you know, when you're starting anything new, is that you want to do it with that group of people, and you want to really assess them and find out what they want. And it doesn't have to come with something like an official formal assessment. It can come as something as easy as folks coming into your neighborhood, folks coming into your recreation center and pulling them aside and saying, hey, we noticed you're here twice a week. What are some of the things that you enjoy doing most? And are we meeting those? And what are some of the things that you would really like to see here? But it also means going outside of those folks that are already coming into your community. It really takes some time and investment in starting conversations with community members all over the place in your community. And I think those are the ones that in Parks and Recreation we sometimes forget about, is it's okay to have casual conversations with people in our community, whether you're, you know, meeting them in the grocery store, or if you're just hanging out in your own parks that you may run and talking to the people who are visiting there. What makes this park a great place for you to be? What do you wish was here? Talking to parents whose kids are playing on playgrounds. What do you wish we had here? Does this provide enough excitement and challenge and engagement for your kiddos that are coming to the park? Or doing some self-assessment, meaning an organization kind of taking an internal look and saying, well, what are we offering, and is that enough of it? So I think when it comes down to community engagement, it's so important that we do it with our community members, both the ones that we see on a regular basis, but especially those that we may see in other places in our community. I think one of the coolest things I've seen people really engage and start asking those assessment kind of questions is at the big, you know, municipal or community festivals that people are hosting that are in our communities. That's a great place to get a booth and ask questions, because that's a whole entire different group of community members than maybe coming into a rec center or going to a park. And that's how you find out more. That's how I think you find out what people are really wanting. Because when you start talking about health and how that's defined for a variety of people, everybody defines it differently. And I think we have to be very cautious or engaging when we start asking people about their health. Assuming that people have bad habits and need to change is not the best way to go. I think going the positive approach and saying, well, what does health mean to you and how can we help you achieve it? That's the positive way to go, because then they're already in a positive mindset, and Parks and Recreation is on the forefront of saying, we heard you, we listened to you, and now we're making this available for you. So I think establishing that trust is a whole nother part of it, or a very key part of it too.
Absolutely. And so that kind of brings me to another question, and a lot of what you're saying, I have a ton of different questions for you, but I guess when it comes to making those changes, let's say that you've formed this collaboration with a local health partner, and you've listened to your community, and now you get the idea that all the vending machines should be replaced with all healthy items. What do you feel like is the best way to implement some of those changes? Like, should you just do it and say, this is our initiative and this aligns with our values, so we're going to make the change? Or do you kind of like transition into that and slowly shift so that you make sure to educate your community along the way?
Oh yeah. I think the best way for me to speak on that is, from what I have learned from my colleague Justin Cutler up in Westminster, when they did decide to do that and go 100% healthy vending, he really shared with me that education and engagement with the community was key. Asking them what they wanted, if I think they kind of did some predecessor kind of asking of questions, wanting to know, well, if we're going to go all healthy, what are the kinds of stuff and what are the kinds of choices that you'd want to see? Because they knew that there was probably going to be some challenges and some backlash, but they did a huge amount of education with the community, providing information. And most importantly, they provided the community with their why. Why were they choosing to go 100% healthy vending? It certainly wasn't to make more cash. It was definitely because they were looking at how they can contribute to and be a engaged partner in the health of the overall health of their community members. And when they were really able to articulate that, I think, yes, why there was definitely a transition. I think it made it easier to do. I think our colleagues up in Boulder this last year and the year before, Allison Rhodes and that crew, they decided to take the junk food out of being served in all the public spaces that Boulder Parks and Recreation provides food for. And they caught some backlash. The quote unquote, they took our ice cream away from the pool situation. But as an organization, Boulder Parks and Recreation had really made the choice to say, we are going to put health first and foremost, and we're going to do what we can do to provide healthy options from an eating standpoint in their concessions. And what they really did that I thought was great was, you can still bring whatever you want to bring to the pool. We're just no longer going to be the ones selling it to you. So they really took a hard look at what that looked like, because I think they got kind of thrown in the fire, so to speak, with the media, because they picked it up and they're like, oh, they've taken away our ice cream. But they handled it really well, because that was a priority for them. They made health, and they made contributing to the health of their community members a priority within their organization. And then they mapped out how that was going to look. And I think if you look at what's happening in the schools across the country, is they're working to make things healthier as far as choices that kids have, why they're eating, and what concessions are inside schools. I think we see some parks and recreation organizations doing the similar kind of thing. Yeah, you can bring whatever you want to bring, your own food choices, but from our standpoint, we're going to try to make a conscientious effort to provide things that are, you know, a healthier choice, and you can choose to eat them or choose not to eat them. Because I don't know if you know this, Becky, but Parks and Recreation is the second larger largest provider of food for school-aged children, second only to schools, because of all the different before and after school programs Parks and Recreation provides, because of all the after school programs, and all the summer camps that we provide. I know many Parks and Recreation organizations provide preschool programs too, and snacks come with that. But we also run all of, not all, but many of the ball fields, whether it's baseball, soccer, football, rugby, all that good stuff. And, well, who provides all the food there? Does Parks and Recreation, or do we contract that out? How's that look? And if we take on the proverbial we, meaning we as a profession, take on, well, is health going to be something that we prioritize? How do we do that across the board? And what can we have a positive influence for kids, for families within those areas? So great. There are some great samples there. But yeah, I think first and foremost, every organization who decides to make health a priority or become part of their philosophy or become part of their policy needs to be able to state their why very, very clearly. They need to be able to put it in action consistently, and they need to include community members in those decisions and in why they're making that choice, and in the education of the community saying, hey, we're doing this because your health matters. Your health matters to us, and this is how we're going to contribute to it. This is what we're going to offer as programs, as activities, as options. I mean, I've seen such great programs with nutrition and health and cooking come into the Parks and Recreation programs. One of the rec centers for the city of Aurora has a teaching kitchen that's like phenomenal in their organization, so that they can do just that. They can have education opportunities. So there's my big long answer for your short question.
Oh, that's perfect. But I guess it all relates back to just making the changes that are going to make as big of a difference as possible, but just knowing that it's a long-term game. So just start small and just don't try to take on too much at once, but
yeah, pick a focus. I mean, with our Public Health Parks and Recreation Collaborative, I think I have 40 key partners from 30 different organizations across the state of Colorado. In addition to that, when we hold our summits, we have another 300 folks from another 70 organizations. And I think that's it. You know, it's totally key to be able to start small and start with something you feel you actually can have influence on, whether it's looking at nutrition or creating options for healthy choices related to how do you shop for the food, how do you cook some of the food, how do you provide or partner with folks who are doing nutrition. Almost every single local public health organization has registered nutritionists and folks who want to help with that. They also have programs that are already in action that you can say, hey, come host one of these in our rec center. Many of them are already evidence-based. Some folks are deciding, okay, the area we want to have the most effect on or influence on might be childhood obesity and increasing physical activity. Well, Parks and Recreation has the opportunity to say, hey, we have youth programs here. We have opportunities for kids to be more physically active. Maybe the people we partner with is school health and wellness, and let's provide free or low-cost after-school programs where the focus is physical activity. And in addition to that, we're going to work on school homework, but we're also going to serve only healthy snacks, and they're doing it together because school health and wellness has got some funding, Parks and Recreation has some funding, and sometimes you can get funding together with different grants and that kinds of things through different organizations. Like we have the Colorado Health Foundation here, which kind of does those kinds of stuff. We've also seen that some organizations out like in Mesa County and Grand Junction on the Western Slope here in Colorado have said, hey, we're going to use our parks and use them for increasing social connectedness and mental health. So that's kind of an area that they have focused on. And they're working with mental health professionals in their local mental health teams, as well as local county public health folks in Mesa County and the Parks and Recreation crew. That's kind of their focus, and they're bringing that about by having programming actually in the parks, things like Tai Chi and things like that, free to anybody who can get to the park. So there's so many different ways to kind of pick a niche that your might be the biggest need in your community and say, this is what we want to tackle first, and then start having those small little conversations about who else should be at our table, who should we invite to our table so that we can best address this local issue. Everybody's community is different. So I've seen, you know, lots of different areas. When we were working with some of the folks in Lakewood, it was, how do we do or create the opportunity for a soft handoff for individuals in the Latino community or the Latino community down in Lakewood, so that they know, yeah, this is a place for everyone, and we want you to have the opportunity to do activities here with your crew. What are the trying to think of the public health nurses. There's so many different programs, and what they did was, how do we make it easy to get to one of the rec centers, or how do we make it easy to come in and try it and feel welcome? And working with those public health nurses that might be working in Head Start or that kind of thing, say, hey, let's meet here and I'll introduce you to some of the folks here, and it becomes a nice soft handoff. So it really just depends on, from a health standpoint, what's the focus for that community? What's one need that you can identify and say, okay, I'm going to start having conversations around this with my fellow Parks and Recreation professionals, but then also start looking outside and say, multi-sectorally speaking, or people outside our world, who can we invite to this table? Who can we talk and say, hey, this is important, and how are you guys addressing this issue already? And maybe how can we do it together?
I see. Okay, so that makes a lot more sense, too, because as you were saying, every community is different. So something that you probably talked about in this conversation already might really speak to someone who is struggling with smoking in parks, or struggling with making sure that there's healthy vending. So I imagine that something is already coming up for them in their mind, and it's just a matter of tackling one thing at a time.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk about my favorite question of the podcast. What does it mean to you to raise the bar in the field of parks and recreation?
I love this question when we talked about it before. I said, I think for sure you got to think big and think way outside of, ooh, we've done that before. Because I think raising the bar means realizing or acknowledging that Parks and Recreation truly is a key player in this world of health, especially when you define it broadly around your community's health. How we do that means acknowledging that we can't do it just by ourselves. And so reaching out across tables, reaching out into other disciplines that are related to our own, gives us more leverage, gives us more opportunity to have more impact with our community. So if we start looking at Parks and Recreation as a key player in health, what does that really mean? Does that mean that we can start now contributing to the data that's gathered and utilized in research? Heck yeah, we can. If we start looking at, okay, we're not just the trees and the playgrounds and our rec centers and our programs and our ball fields, that really is our amazing foundation that we bring to the table. Is that we can be involved in creating and sharing new data. I think parks and recreation professionals, and I'm kind of thinking globally here, I'm not trying to diss or anything anybody, is that sometimes we are extremely focused and get really good inside our box, and sometimes it's time to just not let it be a box anymore and reach way outside that. I mean, we have definitely seen in the news that data and algorithms and all that kinds of stuff is super influential in the world, whether you're talking about Facebook, whether you're talking about artificial intelligence, but it's also really profound when it comes to looking at how do we make changes in health. And I think part of raising the bar is that we need to be a part of participating and initiating some of that data creation, as well as working with folks who can really do the numbers well. And then we have something really tangible that we can say, yep, Parks and Recreation is really making a dent in mental health. We're being able to grow and make it so people's physical health is improving. We are in the business of being able to reduce the symptoms of chronic illness through the activities and the open spaces and places that we have to walk, play. We're a big, big part of how our community members live, work, and play and be healthy. So I guess that's how I see raising the bar, is doing this with our community, with our other professionals, and really making it, really choosing to make a difference, choosing to be a part of the biggest picture, which is, you know, how we live in our communities well.
Right, and it all goes back to quality of life and
yeah,
and being
exactly
proud of the fact that Parks and Recreation actually has that power to improve the health of our communities. So,
oh yeah, I think we have such a wonderful opportunity to be that key player and be engaged, and well, hopefully, be that entity that has gained and developed trust with our communities, where they say, this feels comfortable, this feels like home, and this feels like the place where we know we belong and can grow.
All right, you guys, hope you enjoyed that episode. Jo Burns is doing some great work when it comes to her state of Colorado and her local communities too. And I hope that you are able to take one or two things back to go and work and collaborate in your local community in order to make a huge impact in the health of your community. Thank you guys so much again for listening. Please share if you love this episode, and I look forward to another episode next week.